We are very concerned about Santa Monica. Can you tell us what's happening in your city?
We have a huge opioid crisis on our hands. We have a huge mental health crisis. The symptom of that is homelessness. And we're so focused on ideology versus practicality and common sense and who's in what political group and who's saying it that we haven't solved the problem. I stepped into this and was completely floored at how much we focus on distraction and negative campaigning. Organizations have spent tens of thousands of dollars to spread toxic negative information about candidates running to help serve our city instead of focusing on the issues at hand. And that is what scares me because people are so misinformed. I cannot tell you how many people I talk to that talk about issues that they're upset about, but yet they voted for the very people who are supporting the issues that they don't support, or vice versa.
Our guest today is Lana Negrete, the vice mayor of Santa Monica. She'll share her insights on some of the city's most pressing issues, such as homelessness, crime, and quality of life, and how the special groups and politics are impacting the city's abilities to unite on improving the city as a whole.
If we continue to go down this path of letting small groups and organizations lead campaigns with misinformation, negative tactics, we will be so distracted by that and we won't step farther and farther away from the real issues that we need to be focused on in Santa Monica.
I'm Siamak Kurami. Welcome to California Insider. Lana, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on.
We're excited to have you on because we have talked to a few of your residents in Santa Monica. We actually want to hear from you, a city leader in Santa Monica, what's going on in the city, because we are very concerned about Santa Monica because it's really the jewel of Southern California, one of the key cities that people always have bragged about, either going there or growing up there. Can you tell us what's happening in your city?
We have a huge opioid crisis on our hands. We have a huge mental health crisis. And the symptom of that is homelessness. And from that stems a lot of the crime that happens around in our neighborhoods. So I think in Santa Monica, that has become prevalent just like in other communities. But I do have to say that if you compare us to cities that are just surrounding us, if you drive to downtown LA, if you're in Venice, places that don't have the strong camping laws, you'll see tents. You don't see that in Santa Monica because we don't allow encampments. Our ordinances have been in place long before this was an issue, and that has protected us from that. Do you see more homeless? Absolutely. Do you see more people experiencing substance abuse, mental health issues? Absolutely. But so does everybody else. And I think to say that Santa Monica is this place that's just going downward and zombies are walking around everywhere, and that is the reason why doors are closing their businesses, and that's why our promenade has a lot of vacancies. I mean, that's a fallacy because you have to look at the changes in how people shop today. You have to look at pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, across the board. And then you have to look at the fact that we're a city of 93,000 people, and that population doubles on any given day with whether it be the workforce or tourists or people coming through to experience our beautiful beaches, our pier. So we have issues that everybody's experiencing, but ours are unique in the sense that our population doubles every day. I don't think you could say that about really any other city in the county. So right now we are seeing, because of a host of things, some of those things being federal and state and county laws that have imposed a great deal of restraint in terms of whether it be police officers not being able to really apply the law to the full extent, or city leaders not being able to apply certain ordinances to curtail activity. So that's affected our ability to really clean up what we see happening. And I think that's the real challenge we have right now at the city. Residents are frustrated because they would like to see less homeless people walking around on the street. They would like to see people going into substance use programs instead of being arrested for what is now considered a misdemeanor crime and then let back out on the street a few hours later. And they are coming to us and saying, please do something. And there are some things we can do, but it would require being able to have public civil discourse and being able to be honest and say, hey, we're not a perfect city. We have problems and here's what they are. And let's really engage in how we can fix those. I think the majority of our community in Santa Monica and probably statewide is really in search of common sense politics and practicality. And we just haven't seen that yet. One of the things we need to do is be better advocates to our county, state, and federal leaders. A lot of the laws that trickle down to, you know, the local municipalities are laws that we have to adhere to. So, for example, we cannot tell someone who is laying on the street in a sleeping bag, you can't sleep there. There's some rules, of course, and we did make some changes for, you know, where you can't be in front of certain corridors of businesses. We changed some ordinances so that you didn't have to continually apply every 30 days to post a notice in your window, so that the police officers can be more proactive about moving people out of the doorways of businesses. And that has made some change for sure in the business community. However, there are laws that say that we can't just tell someone that you can't sleep there because we have to offer them a bed to go to. But what's missing and what we're not talking about is the fact that if a bed is available at a facility, it may or may not be in Santa Monica. So now we're relying on our public safety officers to take two officers off the street to transport them potentially outside of the city to get to a bed. And that person has to agree to do that. And we could...
Even if you have a bed available for them, they still have to agree?
They have to agree. You can't take anyone against their will. And so that's the biggest problem. So we can't go around and say, you know, unless they're committing a crime, then they can be arrested. And the way the laws have changed now with the new magistrate system where there's the zero bail, so they call in a magistrate. And then depending on what that magistrate says over the phone, that person will either be cited and released immediately or potentially held for court. And for those folks that say that is to protect people, I say, as someone who's engaged with that population, including in my own family, that oftentimes that interaction with police and that time that they spend waiting for their court appointment, their court hearing.
So going to jail for a few days.
It's not a few days because we can't hold them that long, at least in the city of Santa Monica. But at least we know they're going to show up for their court appointment. And then that is when the judge has discretion and can choose maybe a drug treatment program or some other rehabilitative program that would help that person who's either continuously engaging in the criminal justice system or has substance abuse issues. And that is the road to recovery, which then is the road to permanent housing. And I think this idea that we are going to build our way out of this problem is just... it's just not factual. And I think the majority of our residents feel the same, but we're sort of divided politically on this idea of, like, you either believe in throwing more money at programs to hand out needles in the parks with Narcan and develop housing that has a small percentage for people who either need subsidies or are coming from living on the streets is going to solve the problem. I mean, the reality is, the buildings that we're building and the small percentage of units that are offered to people at a subsidized rate is not going to go to the person that you see with their pants halfway down at the park. That person is not going to go from there to that house. They need other transitional housing and other services before that can be sustainable. And we have had people who do those programs tell us that oftentimes it's multiple attempts of people going into transitional housing and then out back on the street. And so one of the issues we have in our city is, how much money are we putting in to what programs and what are those programs doing? Are they really serving the needs of the population who need the most help? Or are they serving some, you know, political ideology that's really fueling something else? So that's what residents are most frustrated with, I think. They see money being spent. They don't see the problem being...
And you guys are doing this project that, like, it's $1 billion per unit to build, right? Is that one of...
A billion?
A million.
Oh, yeah.
A billion.
Yeah. Look, it's really expensive to build housing, especially in California. There's tons of fees associated with housing. So, you know, with the new RENA numbers being put down on every local jurisdiction, we're being required to lift some of our zoning policies to make it easier, right? The city's sort of divided on, like, oh, the people that were, you know, born and raised here, the old timers. I mean, I'm 44, but I guess I kind of fit in that group where I say, gosh, we're building up so high, we're densifying, we're losing the landscape of our beautiful community. if you say that, you're like put in this other political group. It becomes racist, you know, to want to sort of maintain the quaintness of the city. And I don't think that people are even saying that they want to maintain it because of aesthetics so that it's quaint. We have a large population of people who are over 65. I mentioned earlier that we have 70% of our population are renters. We have an amazing thing in Santa Monica, which is rent control. I was born into a rent control building. I live in one today. I am a renter. It is the only way that I can afford to stay in Santa Monica. And it's really the only way that most of our aging population in the city can stay in their homes. And so as we build all these new buildings, these older buildings, the people who own these buildings that have a lot of rent controlled, you know, apartments in there, if they're not being turned over fast enough, they might find it more lucrative to sell their building. Now, it's not as easy when you have rent-controlled units because you have to go through a really long process. But we do know that people are willing to spend money to make that a lucrative deal for people. So when I say we lose the landscape of the city, we feel like we're also pushing out a lot of our diversity. And it's sort of ironic because the whole basis of this is to be a more diverse city and to make sure that we're including everyone. But we're not including the voices of the aging population.
So from what you're saying, Lana, there's the homelessness issue, which is more related to the drug addiction and people doing drugs in the streets.
And mental health.
And mental health. And then there is the housing issue where it seems like a lot of your resources and focus is going through this housing, mm-hmm. which might not really help this big problem that you guys are having. Are you concerned about your city?
I am concerned, and I'm concerned that the more we continue on and we don't really pause and ask for data. I mean, one of the things I've always wondered is, have we ever said, how many homeless people can Santa Monica serve, right, with programming and resources? Have we ever looked at that number and then said, once we reach whatever that number is, maybe it's 800, and once we go over that, then do we work with our partners regionally? Because we talk a lot about regional support, meaning, you know, how do we look at the cities to the left and the right of us to say, you know, we share in this problem, right? Because it's sort of borderless. We have the homeless population migrate throughout the day, and it's largely based on service providers, right? Where they can go and get services. So they might go to Venice Family Clinic for medical resources and then come to Sam O'Shell to get their laundry washed, take a shower, get a care cleaning kit. And then they might come to some other part of Santa Monica to get food. So we share in this problem with LA County and with our partners in CD11. And how can we work together? But in order to do that, we need to know what we can handle. So what can we support as a city of Santa Monica? And we haven't done that yet. So we keep dumping in more money and more resources financially into programs, but there's no data behind it to say, okay, well, this problem is just going to keep growing. Because if we keep expanding the program, then people are just going to keep coming to utilize the program. But when we do collect information around where people come from, because I talk with them when I do ride-alongs all the time. I talk with people and say, hey, where are you from? I have never met anyone, not once, that has said that they're from Santa Monica. I've met one person, actually, I take that back, who said he went to Sam O'Hai, but I've not met anyone who has said that they're from Santa Monica or even from California.
How many of them have you talked to, roughly?
I mean, hundreds, because I go on lots of different ride-alongs, whether it be with fire. We have the people concerned. I've gone out with them, with our police officers. I've gone on many ride-alongs. So I engage all the time, and I was doing that way before. At what point do we say that these other states are experiencing the same problem in terms of substance abuse problems and mental health and even affordability? It's expensive to live, right, in the United States. But if they're sending these people to us that they can't serve, at what point do we say, we're either going to send you a bill for this individual who we've provided services for, or you're going to need to start thinking, and the federal government needs to start looking and saying, these other states need to start providing the same programming that we're doing, because we can't sustain everybody's problem around the nation and then be pressured to use our resources. Because what happens when we use those resources and we start focusing it there and it just keeps growing and growing and it has no end because we have no idea what we can actually afford, it takes away from the rest of the community. And those that are lowest on the socioeconomic poll, they miss out the most.
How much of it do you think is the state laws and county and state that is impacting you guys?
Well, I think a large percentage of it is the state and county laws. But I do think going back to before there was some changes around whether it be Prop 47, whether it be Proposition 1 that just got proposed, I think Santa Monica has always had this. We've always been a progressive city. We've always been a diverse city. We've always been a welcoming city, right? We're this tourist place. We've got the pier. We've got the beach. But because of our rent control, which has been so strong and amazing in our city, we've been able to keep families in their homes for generations. And so that is what's made us diverse in its population in terms of socioeconomic scale. However, we have also been a city that has said, bring us your poor, bring us your tired, and we will serve them. We will have the programs for them. We have a ton of beautiful, compassionate people in Santa Monica. I myself have a nonprofit that serves at-risk youth. And with that, you know, I think in a lot of ways we have attracted more of the problem in on our doorstep. And now we're sort of faced with this issue of like, oh no, how do we serve all these people effectively? Because what happens if you're serving a couple hundred people, 200-300 people, you might be able to see that through from that person getting off of drugs, getting into mental health programming, getting a job, getting permanent housing. But if you're forced to take your resources and spread it over 1,000 people, and that's not counting the people that are coming through and coming out of the city every day, how can you really, really serve that person and their needs to the end? At that point, you're just, you know, putting a Band-Aid on something and it keeps coming off.
Folks, you've probably been hearing me talk about VyRefi for a while now. VyRefi has been getting a ton of phone calls from you, and I thank you for supporting an investment that actually helps people. A lot of people are talking about this investment, and I'd like to review the basics with you. First off, yes, it's true. You can earn up to 10.25% fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market or to the Fed. You can turn your income on or off, compounded, whatever you choose, and there are absolutely no fees. There are no restrictions on your principal if you ever need your money back, and you'll get your monthly statement with no surprises. If you are not sure if you can trust this economy, this secure collateralized portfolio may be a very good option for you. Just go to investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refi.com. Folks, I take my endorsements very seriously. If you're looking for a solid investment that helps people, contact my friends at VyRefi and then tell them Siamak Karami sent you. Now let's go back to the interview. Are you guys responsible for everyone that moves there? If somebody just comes there and says, I'm homeless and just sleeps on the street, is it your responsibility now?
In essence, yes, we are helping anybody that's there. We're not going to turn someone away and say, oh, well, you're from this county. However, there is a regional system now that all the organizations work together and can identify if somebody is double dipping and doesn't need to. Oh, you're already getting these services in LA County, so we don't need to repeat those services here. That does exist. How well it works, I don't know because I have not seen the inner workings of it. I can just tell you that, you know, these nonprofits, they rely on grants. They rely on funding from the city. But as long as we keep funding these programs, I mean, those are supplying jobs, right, and salary for people. I wonder how far away we're getting from actually solving the problem because we have organizations that are biting off around the edge of the problem.
So it's become like a job for people to just...
Right. I mean, we have...
But they're not really fixing the issue.
Right. I say oftentimes, as a parent, for the needle exchange program, for example, I made the statement that if I walked into my kid's bedroom, and I think any parent could relate to this, and saw my kid using drugs and shooting up with a needle, I would not stop and say, oh no, I want to make sure that that's a clean needle and that those drugs are pure and they don't have fentanyl. So what we're going to do, because I know you're going to do it anyways, you can do drugs on, you know, Mondays and Thursdays in your room, but I'm going to give you the clean needle and I'm going to go source the drugs for you. I mean, that's ridiculous. And that's kind of what we're seeing in the community. We have dollars going to programs to meet people where they're at in the hopes that at some point they'll engage with them after 10 or 15 interactions. Well, I'm thinking at some point they're going to fall victim and
they're going to die probably
from their... And the same goes for mental health or whatever led people.
So who's doing this? Who is behind?
Specifically, we have Venice Family Clinic coming to Santa Monica, but the county has told us we have no jurisdiction, and it is a county-funded program. And because of that, Santa Monica cannot say, uh-oh, you're not allowed.
So LA County has decided to do this.
Has decided to do it. And they were supposed to fulfill community engagement meetings, two of which were supposed to be notified broadly so that everybody could attend. They were supposed to engage with city leaders and the police department, and that was not done. They are now doing it. When I attended and asked questions, my questions were put in the parking lot. That's what she said, and we never really got back to them. But what I was told and what I took away at that meeting was that they have a bunch of tools to address this issue, and this is just one of them, harm reduction. And so I asked, at some point, when you're hammering a nail with a wrench, when do you go back and look in the toolbox and see that you need a hammer? I mean, I'm just wondering how we reassess what tools we're using. But it has become that word harm reduction. And even using the word substance abuse, I'm not a seasoned politician, so I'm probably saying that wrong. I've been corrected many times, even, you know, unhoused, homeless. It's like we're so focused on using the correct vocabulary around naming what the problem is that we haven't solved the problem. And we're so focused on ideology versus practicality and common sense and who's in what political group and who's saying it that we're not solving the problem. So this is coming from a very heavily politicized place. So harm reduction, funding more development to build affordable housing at any cost lives in this what's considered progressive Democratic group. I'm a registered Democrat and always have been. I went independent at one point to vote for Bernie Sanders. But I have been called many times right wing. I've been compared to Trump and DeSantis. People have drawn connections. Organizations have spent tens of thousands of dollars to spread toxic negative information about candidates running to help serve our city instead of focusing on the issues at hand. And going back to what you said earlier, I think that's what residents are most upset about.
Why did you get painted? So you're a Democrat, and then what happened?
So there are labor unions and there are other organizations that want to endorse you during a campaign season. I had never campaigned before, never ran for anything, was definitely involved in my community, but not like this politically. And so Unite Here, Local 11, is a strong and powerful labor union. And I was somebody who was part of UFCW when I worked for United Food Commercial Workers, Local 1442, when I worked for Vons. I, at one point when I sold insurance, one of our clients was SEIU, very familiar and of how important the labor unions are. Well, in order to get an endorsement, they want you to subscribe to, you know, what you vote for, what you support and what you don't support. And I like to look at issues as they're presented and vote based on what seems right in that moment. It's not always going to line up with this group.
They want you to vote the way they want.
Exactly. And there was one issue that came up around the Shore Hotel that had been going on for years. And they wanted to expand their lobby restaurant bar a little bit. And they wanted to be able to offer it to people who weren't just staying at the hotel so that someone walking off the street on Ocean Avenue across from the pier could also come in for a drink or a bite to eat. Now, mind you, this was during a time during the pandemic where less people are staying in the hotel. And in order to keep the jobs of the kitchen staff and whatnot, this proposed amendment would have helped him continue to keep at least the restaurant business alive. I didn't see any problem with that. The planning department of the city presented no problem with it. But there had been this decade-long issue around the person who ran that hotel and how that hotel had come about. It used to be two motels. There were an immigrant family that bought it and since developed what is a luxury hotel across the street. And they're not unionized. They're not a part of Unite Here. And so they did not like that I voted for them and then spent tens of thousands of dollars to the point where the LA Times contacted me and said, we don't report on local politics, but we were just so amazed at the fact that this union spent more money to try to defeat you than they did to support their candidates that they wanted to win. There was a campaign that went out that said Lana Negrete is a criminal And I have never been accused of any crime, and there was no crime listed. It was just being associated with someone who, in their eyes, is a criminal. A criminal of what? I don't know. There's no crime that's been committed. So that, coupled with the fact that I was considered the swing vote and just voted on issues as they were presented.
Which, that's what you were elected to do, right?
That's what I was elected to do. And I think I got elected against all odds, not being a part of the machine, because of that. For example, this Santa Monica for Renters' Rights has been around forever in Santa Monica. And I have always been a huge supporter because, like I said earlier in the show, I was born and raised in a rent-controlled building. My father, my uncle, my family have been able to age in their apartments because of rent control. I am able to stay in Santa Monica because of rent control. And that is how that organization started off. But it has since grown to be something else. And when they did not endorse me, not only did they not endorse me, but alongside Unite Here, because they all work together in the Santa Monica Democratic Club, they said that I was anti-rent control. And I had people who I had known for decades calling me, writing to me, very upset. And I said, you were just at my apartment last month. Nothing's changed. I don't own the apartment building now. I still live in the same 50-year-old, you know, single-pane window apartment building that I lived in before. And it's rent control. And I've never said that I don't support rent control. So this misinformation campaign is what worries me the most about the city, because we have an upcoming election. And the idea that there's like 500 people that are responsible for the 50,000 votes that it takes, you know, to win in an election like this year, because it'll be more people will go and vote because of the general election. It frightens me because as a society, we've become really lazy about getting our information. We read, you know, sort of like these tabloid headlines. We have such a short attention span. Our young people are getting it off of TikTok, or what their friend says, or what someone's sharing that you like or follow on Instagram. And in an instant, that same person can be canceled for saying the wrong thing. And that is what scares me, because people are so misinformed. I cannot tell you how many people I talk to that talk about issues that they're upset about, but yet they voted for the very people who are supporting the issues that they don't support, or vice versa. Who has the time to really dig in and do the truth seeking? Even coming on this show, I was told that this was a far right-wing conservative show, and it would be detrimental to me politically. Okay, well, I'm not so concerned about that, because I'm just speaking my truth. And if people want to take fractions of what I'm saying and make it something else, then that's their problem. And I hope that people will have the sense and feel disrespected when people do that. You should be offended if someone tries to splice up information and connect things that aren't connected. And you should do your own research. And for me, I own a local music shop. I tell people all the time, come on 19th and Santa Monica Boulevard and meet me for a coffee. I have met with many residents who thought they knew what I was about, thought they knew my politics, spent an hour with me and said, oh my God, I had you all wrong. But I got this flyer that said, you were like Trump and DeSantis and you're a criminal. I said, what crime did I commit? Well, I don't know. I mean, I read that you were illegally on the tarmac when Biden landed. I mean, our past mayor painted me as she knew that I was there when he landed in a separate vehicle far away. Secret Service knew that I was there. I was an elected official. I even took a picture for her from a distance behind a window and sent it to her. But then they had a full-fledged investigation, which took time, money, and resources, and said that I put Biden's life in danger.
This is from the city's resources.
This is from, like, you know, and I see, well, I don't know about the city's resources. Yes, I would imagine.
For the investigations,
that they,
yes, right.
We had, our city attorney's office had to spend time, you know, looking into this issue. I was also accused of giving gift cards to police officers from a restaurant that had just merely said, this is done all the time. Oh, we want, you know, fire and police to come, you know, patronize our restaurant during their lunch break. So if you're going to you know, go to one of their meetings, please give these. Oh, she gave those to cover up a rape case for this restaurant. Anybody who read the article that I engaged with was like, yeah, that article was crazy and didn't make any sense. But the headlines still stick for people. I mean, there's a Twitter, which I think has since been changed. That was called, it was like Lana Negretti and Nuri are a crook. Like, you know, connecting me with an LA city council member who I don't even know. just at a council meeting the other night, a gentleman played a video of me saying, pointing him out for filming and saying, let's not make this issue of needles in the parks political. This is a common sense issue. But he played that video alongside a video of Trump inciting violence and telling people to go storm the Capitol. And that was his message. And this is what is wrong with local politics, with national politics, is people are being fed misinformation all day long. And they then spread it. It's like a game of telephone. And then they wonder why we're still sitting on the same host of problems of public safety, homelessness, you know, opioid addiction crisis and mental health. Well, because we're all sort of like, look over here. It's like a smoke show and build more. Let's build. Let's build our way out of this problem. So, you know, the labor union is made up of different unions, obviously. But this one particular union has been known to be extremely aggressive and attack, you know, candidates to the point where people are fearful. And I'm not fearful. I didn't come into this because I have a political trajectory. I was like, I'm just serving my community. A lot of people who start at the city council level have aspirations to move into Senate or Congress. I just wanted to make the streets safer and cleaner so my kids can continue to walk to school and take the bus. And I can continue to open the store of my 52-year-old legacy business, give instruments to the schools, teach lessons, and not have to clean up a needle or human feces on the way to work. I mean, that was really why I did it. I have a nonprofit that serves at-risk youth. I want to continue to do that. You know, we give instruments to the schools so that we can continue to promote music and arts education, because I think that's part of mental health. But I stepped into this and was completely floored at how much we focus on distraction and negative campaigning. And the ironic thing is that the groups that were doing it were the same groups that are all about diversity, equity, inclusion. But those same groups did not want to endorse a brown woman who is on the lower end of the socioeconomic pole, who is a renter in the city. They didn't want to include me. They excluded me. In fact, there were rallies around the city at one point in time about me being anti-rent control because I had proposed something that may or may not have been a good idea at the time. But instead of engaging in civil discourse with me or amongst each other to even evaluate if that was a good plan, immediately it became this highly politicized thing. And I was silenced or tried to silence me. And, you know, it was like, you can't say that. And now if you stand next to this person and if you stand next to her, then you stand for all of these ideologies. Without even knowing someone, people can do that nowadays. As a matter of fact, just speaking of that event we had a press conference in one of our parks about needles. There was someone there taking pictures of people talking to certain residents who they've already established what their ideologies are. And that was newsworthy for people. Meanwhile, we have people dying every week of overdoses on our streets. We have businesses that are small mom and pop shops closing their doors because it's either too expensive. When, for example, myself included, we have been robbed over 9 times and we've been open 52 years. And prior to the looting that we had on May 31st of 2020, we had been robbed maybe twice, I could count. We have had to replace our glass more times than I can count on one hand. And our insurance premiums go up. Our deductibles, we don't even bother because it's more expensive and then they end up canceling you. Now insurance companies for retailers are adding on glass riders. So it's very hard to run a business, especially if you're a small mom and pop business. I don't have venture capitalists. I don't own the building. We're leasing it. So ironically, the same groups that are screaming out for diversity, equity, inclusion are ran by people who oftentimes have never had the lived perception that I have, or somebody who has actually had to struggle and has not had generational wealth. So they're experiencing life in Santa Monica very differently than maybe somebody like myself, whose parents were divorced and we moved around from apartment to apartment, never owned a home, constantly struggling. Myself, who has had to at times, you know, rely on, you know, help from the community, help from the government to help raise my own kids. I mean, when you know what that's like, you're the best person suited to set forth policy and legislation around those issues. And you work together. But we are not pulling out a chair for any of those people. Instead, the same people who cried diversity, equity, inclusion are saying, hold on, let me speak for you because I know better. And literally excluding those people from the process, because if you don't say the right thing and you're not reading the script of that ideology, well, then you can't be a part of our group or club. So.
Why are so many people leaving California? It wasn't long ago, people from everywhere wanted to move to the Golden State to enjoy a better life. Sadly, the standard of living has been dropping in the past decade. Are you like me and wonder why this is happening? I'm Siamak Karami, host of California Insider. In our film, Leaving California, The Untold Story, I take you an intimate journey of love, loss, tragedy, and hope as residents face the prospect of leaving their beloved state. Everyday people like you tell their stories about why they have to move out of the state even though they don't want to. Experts and policymakers also give insights about what's happening behind the scenes. Together, we get to the root cause of this exodus. Go to leavingcalifornia.com to view the first 15 minutes of the film for free. By watching Leaving California, you can be part of the solution. Again, go to livingcalifornia.com. So are you saying these organizations, they were trying to help everybody in Santa Monica, they've kind of changed to just be one way of doing things, and then they're forcing everybody in Santa Monica to just go that one way. And if you're not in that way, then something is wrong with you, or you're like from another political party, or you're canceled.
Yeah. If you're not encompassing what is considered by a small group of people to be progressive politics, then you're racist and you're Republican and you're far right conservative. And all of that name calling and negativity and assumption is exactly what they're against. Oftentimes on both ends of the spectrums, on the right and the left, it's like they're meeting in the middle. They're one and the same. They're spending so much time with toxicity and negativity and assumption and calling people names that we can't even have civil discourse. To me, what is most important is that we have a balanced dais that represents everybody in the city. And in order to do that, you have to represent the people who are maybe more conservative in their politics. And you have to represent the people that don't come from generational wealth. And you have to represent the business owners. And you have to represent, you know, whatever. Everyone's got to be represented to have balanced decision making. But when we have organizations who are orchestrating who gets put on what commissions and boards, and they're also in charge of who gets endorsed and who gets all the votes. So if you're a Democrat and you belong to the Santa Monica Democratic Club, and they send you a flyer and say, these are who we endorse and who you should vote for, you might say, well, I align with what they, you know, my beliefs are their beliefs. So these people must all be checked out and must be who I should vote for. Instead of looking into, well, what are the issues that you care about in Santa Monica? And how are they going to solve those problems? And are they even talking about those problems? Because I can tell you right now, if they started to look into it, they would start to realize that there might be two people of the candidates that they endorse, but there might be two people over here from an organization that they're not a part of that's making sense. But God forbid we make a balanced, common sense decision based on how we feel. We're just living in a society now where people are so afraid to say the wrong word, vote for the wrong person. I'm just wondering when everyone's going to wake up and say, you've been complaining about literally the same issues. I mean, we've been talking about public safety and homelessness for a very long time, and nothing has changed, and we're just spending more money on it. So when you start to follow the money and you start to figure out who are the people that are responsible for creating the policy and legislation at the city level all the way up to national politics, and who is making it possible for them. As somebody who is not a politician by trade, I didn't have these organizations already in my pocket. So you have to go and like win their endorsement. And like I said earlier, in order to do that, it's an exchange. Or what are you going
to
do for me?
You have to vote for them, right? Apparently they
actually
make you a list.
They have a form too. There's a couple of the organizations included denouncing support from the police. So you had to say that you would not get endorsed by public safety officers. As a local official, for me to not support the police officers in our city is ridiculous. I mean, I can tell you right now that one of the biggest investments that you can give to our public safety officers and our fire department is morale. It doesn't cost anything but our voice and our support. And we have depleted that during everything that happened during the riots. I can tell you right now, there's an issue around pretextual stops. And this may very well be a problem in other communities. And police oversight is definitely needed in other states, other counties, other cities in LA County. But in Santa Monica, the issues that we're facing are not racist police officers. And yet we create a group and lots of reports and time, and we're constantly poking at what is predominantly Black and brown police officers, and we're asking them about their racial biases. And every time I sit in these conversations, I am just melting inside, because we are literally judging them for putting a uniform on, and we're saying, you wear this uniform, so you stand for all these things, bad and good. And lately, it's you stand for all these evil things. They completely ignore the brown face or the Black face of that person and what they may have experienced in their own personal life and how they came to be a police officer. I happen to grow up with a lot of them and know how they came to be. And some of it is because of negative interactions that they've had with police officers. So they wanted to be one so that they could be an upstanding police officer. So I find it so disheartening when we do this. I watch it happen in our city council. It just happened. We apply national narratives. We apply these national pushes from what is perceived to be a progressive Democratic Party issue, and we apply it to something that doesn't exist in our own community, completely ignoring the actual issues that do exist. So we could be, instead of worrying about whether or not or focusing on policies to stop our police officers from being proactively engaging and stopping criminals and saying that, oh, well, you're only pulling these people over because you're racist. Instead of focusing on the homeless population, the money that we're spending on programs that could actually serve them, we're focusing on things like that. And that's what's upsetting to people. But if you speak in favor of the police, I am very open about my support for our police department. I am very passionate about the work that they do. I'm passionate about the work that the fire department does, because they are the first responders.
They have a very difficult role.
And they're engaging with this population that is making this community unsafe for everybody in a lot of ways and for themselves. And their hands are tied in a lot of ways. And if our community doesn't start really supporting them from a moral aspect, and our city council doesn't openly support them morally, like giving them morale,
the appreciation,
yeah, you're appreciated by your city council and your community. It's really hard for them to show up every day in the face of adversity just for being a police officer in today's world anyways, to kiss their family goodbye and wonder if they're going to come back later. But then on top of it, to be scrutinized without ever engaging or getting to know that person, or even really understanding what programs already exist and what measures are already existing to make sure that we're addressing issues of bias. It's a wonder why we end up losing, you know, some of our police officers who come with the most knowledge, right? We end up losing some of those officers to other departments. But I think there's a shift happening, and there's a majority on council now where they do have that support. We need to keep that going. And we're at risk right now because we have an election coming up, and the other side, so to speak, is already getting ready. They're doing really early endorsements, and I think it's a tool to sort of disengage other people. And that's unfortunate, because it's really expensive to run for city council. You can only get $410 per person as a donation. And to really run a healthy campaign and win and be able to do mailers, personally, individually, you probably have to raise at least $50,000. Some would say even more, but I'm just going to go with $50,000, okay? And that's if you're doing a grassroots campaign like I did, knocking door to door, letting people get to know you, holding events and inviting the community so you can touch as many residents as you can. But if you don't have an independent expenditure or a political action committee, a PAC, raising money for you and doing, you know, more advertising and more mailers, it's really, really difficult. If you don't get the endorsements of these labor unions and these organizations who are also going to spend money, they have a lot of funding. It's really hard. And then when you get elected, we are paid a stipend, around $17,000 a year. And you're giving anywhere from, depending on how involved you are, 25 to 40 hours a week to city council, you know, between reading 400-page agenda packets, because we have a meeting every other Tuesday.
It's a full-time job.
It's a full-time job. And so who is going to do that? Is it going to be the mom that's single that has two jobs? She's now also going to give up her time to make $17,000 a year. So we lose the voice of that person. Is it going to be, you know, someone like myself? I'm just crazy and will take on anything. Everyone says I need to say no. I'm so passionate about my city. I'm born and raised here. I want my kids to have the opportunity to also stay in the city if they choose to. And I have really strong support at home. My husband's been super supportive from day one. He keeps me grounded. He tells me, you continue to be you. The minute I see you not being you, I'm pulling you out of this thing. Speak your mind, be true to yourself, and don't worry about what anyone else says. And I'm fortunate that I have that. So if you don't have that support system at home, you don't have the flexibility of a spouse or another person to make up for whatever finances you lose in, you know, giving up your time to run, and you don't have this long-standing relationship with people who are deeply involved in the politics of Santa Monica, it's really difficult to run. And that is why for decades we have seen our city council comprised of, and I'm sure in most cities, people who don't represent the entire community. It's oftentimes people who have generational, the luxury of either, whether it's generational wealth or not, the luxury of wealth and time, right? You either have all the time in the world because you're older and you're maybe retired, or you have lots of money and you don't need to worry about, you know, the little stipend that you get. And so then you start to wonder, well, then what's your motive for running? You know, and for me, my motive is to make our city better, and we need more people like that. But in order to do it, we've got to be able to speak openly, honestly, engage in differing opinions. It's okay to have completely different opinions. If I'm able to impress upon someone a point or a fact, and this person's able to do the same thing to me, we might actually come to a solution that serves everybody. And if we both walk away feeling like we lost a little, well, then it was probably the perfect solution. But we're just not at that place. And that is what I'm most worried about Santa Monica. I'm most worried for Santa Monica about is if we continue to go down this path of letting small groups and organizations lead campaigns with misinformation, negative tactics, we will be so distracted by that and we won't step farther and farther away from the real issues that we need to be focused on in Santa Monica.
To set the record straight, actually, we are a show that's focused on issues. And we have had probably more Democrats on this show than Republicans, because when the way people vote, 60% of people are Democrats. So we've given more voice to Democrats. And a lot of times we don't even know if our guests are Democrats or Republicans, because we want to get people out of the national, this whole bipolar national issues that people don't really know much about, and it doesn't really affect them. It does affect them, but not that big of a deal. We are bringing people the information they need to get, to guests like yourself who have the courage to come forward and tell us what's going on. Now, do you have any other thoughts for our audience?
My message to people is do the homework, dig deeper. You can't get your news off of social media, and you can't get your news from your next door neighbor. You've got to do your own homework. You have to figure out what resonates with you, what you care about most. And you need to know that I don't care what news media outlet you're watching, someone's got a narrative that they're trying to sell you. And if you can't see that by now, well, you know, then I don't think people should be voting unless they're going to figure out who they're actually voting for. So whether it be your Supreme Court judges, whether it be your DA, you need to look at that. You need to do some homework and figure out, you know, what bills or proposition did they co-author? And that takes homework and that takes patience. But either you do that or you find an honest publication, or you find an honest outlet that can give you a really wide variety of people to listen to, similar to this show. I enjoy watching it for that reason. And I hope that we can have more shows like this out in the community, because I think people need to just be given the information to decide for themselves. You can listen to someone speak with your own two ears. It's not cut up and edited in a way that sound bites are made to piece together a narrative. And then you make your own decision from there.
That's exactly the purpose of this show, is for different leaders to come and different residents to come and explain what they're seeing in the community and create this environment for people to have discussions and then make their own decisions. And people really, from what you're saying, people really need to put a lot of effort into the local elections if they want to see these problems resolved. They have to do more homework.
Yeah, and they've got to ask questions.
So Lana, how do you keep going with all this that's coming your way?
Well, listen, I just was diagnosed in February with breast cancer, and I cannot tell you if I didn't really have a filter before, but whatever filter there was is completely blown out now, because it makes you realize that your time here is important and possibly limited. And it's had me faced with, okay, if I'm here and I'm serving the public in this capacity, And I have this platform, although not very big. It's a platform that maybe most don't have. How can I best use it? And I've been sitting with that a lot. And I want to use it by speaking my truth. I want to continue to be true to myself. And I want to do it not just to, you know, put people on blast out there. I want to do it because I think other people will be inspired to speak their truth. I want to create a safe space for people to say what they feel, to be honest. And what I want from that in the end is for us to come up with real solutions to real problems, because the people who are impacted by these problems are people that I grew up with, people like me, our aging population, and our population that is struggling working multiple jobs just to survive to be there. That is who is impacted on each side of the spectrum of all of these issues we just discussed the most. And if we can start being comfortable with speaking our truth and not worrying about, you know, what group is going to cancel us or who's going to put out some fake news about you, well, then maybe we'll start to actually come up with some real solutions and solve some problems in Santa Monica.
Lana Negrete, Vice Mayor of Santa Monica, it was great to have you on California Insider.
It was great to be here. Thank you so much.
We have an exciting news for you. At California Insider, we created a new product. It's called California Insider Opinion. This is where our insiders and experts across the state are actually telling you what's going on behind the headlines. When there's a breaking news, a big issue, important issue happening in California, they're going to come on the screen and tell you what's happening behind the scenes. And these are like 7 to 10 minutes of opinion formats where the guests are talking to the camera directly, telling you what's happening.
You're paying a tax increase of tens of thousands of dollars every year as a condition of keeping what you already own.
Make sure to look at the description below, because you want to sign up on our newsletter, because a lot of these opinions might be very sensitive that some people in the social media platform may not like. So we're putting them in the newsletter on our website so you can have them. These opinions will actually help you understand the political and policy landscape of California. We highly recommend you follow it.